And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Party and Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can listen to the archive show on our website, www.nagb.org.bs. Go to the education menu and scroll down to Blank Canvas, and you'll be able to listen to the show that aired tonight if you missed part of it. Or you listened to the whole thing, you thought it was so great, you want to listen to it all over again. So, we're talking about the Tilting Axis conference. Tilting Axis is a conference that was founded 3 years ago by Annalee Davis of the Fresh Milk Art Space in Barbados and Holly Bino, who at that point was at ARC magazine and is now our chief curator. It was founded in order to bring a level of criticality and discourse to our practices and to really facilitate networking and knowing each other in the region, and also putting the region itself on an international, on a visible international platform, because I think we are operating on an international, you know, on a very high level, but the rest of the world just doesn't know it yet. So we all went. It was quite a big Bahamian delegation. I mean, well, yeah, it was pretty big, actually. I mean, for a small country, right? Holly, Blue, you guys, and me. I mean, it's five people out of 80 delegates. So we're speaking to just kind of that experience. Now, I know yesterday, now it's the show airs on Wednesday, so it wasn't yesterday. It was 4 days ago now. But on Sunday, I was participating in this extra day that the National Art Gallery of the Cayman Islands put on for the local artists and art practitioners. So five of us who'd been at the conference were giving like professional workshops. Because Cayman is less developed in their artistic scene than we are, and they're really working to kind of, again, up their ante, you guys did a series of studio visits. Yes. And you kind of went around a bit. So what were your impressions? I mean, as artists and as professionals, with I mean, again, you don't need to speak to the art you saw necessarily, but I'm saying, what were your impressions of their scene, and how did it make you feel about your own? Did it change the way you they're both looking at each other like, you take that one, no you take that one?
No, what I found, if I understand the question, I think I do, what I found was that Caymanians, is that how you say it?
Caymanians.
All right, Lord.
Like, I know, and in fact,
I'm speaking from a position.
It's actually Cayman. Okay. It's not Cayman. Like everyone called in this. Yeah. It's actually Cayman. I learned that.
That they also just want to be included in the conversation. Yeah. That was the overwhelming feeling. So we got to see two studios. One was by David Mahoney, I think, who is originally born in the UK, but has lived in Cayman for, I think, about 30 years. And it's really excellent. I think, like, really good drawings and sculptures, but definitely comes from a position of art education, not as a teacher, but as someone who actually went to art school and, you know, and is developed in a practice in a very kind of chronological way.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to see Nazari, was her name?
Nazaria.
I don't remember her last name. Sorry?
And Ray?
No, well, not Ray. Ray's the other guy. Okay. Remember, we were arguments yesterday. Her husband's, we can't remember her husband's name. Anyhow, okay. I will.
Yeah, yeah. And her husband. I have it in my notebook, which I didn't bring. But they have a more organic way of dealing with their practice. So, like, a lot of it was equally showing us the work that they made in the studio they work in, but also just showing us the house where they live, which was built, I think, in the 1920s, and property. Which, and if anybody knows anything about Cayman, is a rare,
really thing. Really old. Yeah, exactly.
Super gentrified, I think, by expatriate investment, which was its own thing. So I think they're railing a lot against that in their practice. So Nazaria and her husband, their practice was a little bit more intuitive and a little bit more emotionally grounded in the history of the Cayman Islands. Mm-hmm. So that contrast, I thought, was quite good to see. But I think the overwhelming feeling that I got was that, you know, this real desire to be included in regional discussions and to raise the criticality of their own practices through those discussions. So I think Tilting Axis being there was really beneficial. Not to kind of prop up anything that, you know, anybody or myself or Tess or anybody was saying, but just the fact that there were so many people in the room. With the same goals, with the same ambitions. So this is basically to move regional art forward, whatever that means, internationally or just like in their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really good position for Caymanian artists to kind of see, you know. Like, I definitely benefited from it, and I have more support, I think, than a lot of those artists do. So
did it at all change the way you feel about our own art scene at all? I mean, or did it just confirm something?
It just confirmed quite, you know, like, I mean, I've seen the logic, maybe not the work, but that kind of logic of just like, listen, I have a creative soul, I just need to make art. And then also, like, you know, I have a creative soul, but I also have the opportunity to like study. So my approach is a little bit more academic, in terms of like art history, and material, the consistency of materiality. This is great, maybe David, that I'm speaking about. I mean, both works, I mean, all the work that we saw was very indicative of the person's practice, really exciting to see. But the contrast between that logic was interesting for me to see. And it's kind of put me, because I find myself thinking that I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, you know, I was lucky enough to go to art school, but I could care less about it. Like, I like the environment that I work in, and try to use that material as goofily as possible. If that's a word.
So. I think we can make it a word.
Okay.
What about you, Tessa?
Yeah. Again, I probably am going to mirror Heino, but I think that the art scene's obviously smaller because there's less people. I kept saying 80,000.
I think it's 60 or 80,000 people.
It's
so few people.
And, you know, of course, then there's going to be less people creating, and there is, seems to be a different sense of kind of identity because there's such a big expatriate community there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's interesting as Bahamians to travel, because I think, you know, we see a lot of problems here that we have, for sure. I'm not belittling any of them, but then you go somewhere else and you see the scales just tipped massively in another direction. So, I mean, really, there's almost no native culture left there.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find. And I think that's for, you know, Caymanians, like, really, really hard, because, again, it's just... First of all, so many British people after independence here left and went there, right?
Yeah.
So all the people that couldn't cope with independence here were like, oh, I have to go to the Cayman Islands.
There was a couple, like, things that seemed to be sort of similar to here as well. I mean, kind of, some foods and sort of a little bit the architecture. And, you know, the thing is, when you get together, you realize that there's a lot of similarities to what kind of happens in the region, and potentially, you know, maybe it's some comfort to them that they, you know, they, we all can connect on these things.
And it's the little things, because we went for a walk yesterday, and apparently they don't eat sea grapes, you know, and so we were like, you know, like,
we're like, these are grapes you can eat.
Yeah, like, you can eat them. And,
we don't eat breadfruit. I mean, there's breadfruits growing everywhere on the island, and we don't, you know, why isn't that in Bahamian cuisine? It's so weird, right?
So we were, like, in some weird plaza yesterday, and I think it was actually, like, Chris was also there from Trinidad, and he was like, I don't eat this foolishness, and Luke was practically climbing the tree.
Yeah.
Like, because it was like, all the sea grapes are wasting, so you were, like, giving out sea grapes, and everybody's eating sea grapes, and you're like, well, that's interesting. And
we're going to go back in 5 years, and they're going to be making sea grape wine.
Exactly.
So it's just, like, those kind of little things where there's an obvious overlap. That we kind of miss, and it actually becomes quite meaningful, you know?
Yeah. And what did you think about the institution itself?
Well, so the National Gallery of Cayman, they are a new building, and sort of have different spaces in the building designated for education and for lectures, and then they have two gallery spaces, an upstairs and a downstairs, and sort of different offices. So completely different sort of setup than our National Gallery has, which is an older building that has a bit of a different character to it. So in some ways it was quite an efficient building because you could use these different spaces, but then you also didn't get the character of an old space. So there's definitely that difference. And they have a pretty big team working there for what felt like less art, again, because it's a smaller country. So there's that sort of difference. And they have they had a more of a sort of, do you like maybe like a British sort of sensibility about the way things were presented? And I think it's just cultural difference. And the artwork in the two exhibitions was quite different than what we see here. I mean, it has a very different language. So it was just an experience of kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Central experience.
And Heine?
I mean, I like the space. It's like Tessa was saying, it's a smaller space, but because it's new, it seems like it was tailored to some specific goals, which is exhibitions, obviously. But what I liked especially is that they have a, like a little, you know, not a little conference room, but like a pretty
we need a conference
room, and it's just like beautiful sound. Like people didn't even need microphones, you know. Library.
Well, because the ceilings are so. I mean, again, really like good. It's an ongoing problem for us whenever we do things in the ballroom. Everyone's like, "You've got to get your sound sorted out." Now, if I had sound engineers, and then they're like, "Unless you want to carpet the whole ballroom, not just the floor, but the ceiling and the walls, this is how it's going to sound because it's a big echoey room."
For sure.
It's not about the mic; it's about, you know, the acoustics. So we need to build an auditorium that has better acoustics.
Professionally, it was really professionally presented.
I was really
amazed. How on point everyone was. So if a presenter spoke too long, like they missed out on the questions, you know. Like people like taking notes is like, okay, maybe, you know,
don't
get too emotionally invested because the dialogue is the important thing. So, you know, so if you have 20 minutes, stick to 20 minutes.
There was no Caribbean time
keeping there. The buses came on time, and then and there's a beautiful recap of the day before, which I've never seen before. At first, it made me giggle. I was like, we were here just 12 hours ago. Everybody remembers. But it was, again, a way of distilling what was happening and introducing what was going to happen, which I thought was quite efficient and really, really well.
Those breakaway groups where
the breakaway groups are really helpful.
People sort of brought up topics that they were specifically interested in from the seminars and or from the presentations, and then each group had a sort of topic that they wanted to troubleshoot their own issues that they were facing or just interests that they were facing. So one of them was institutions, one of them was collections or archiving, or and then there was another curating group, and
where do we go from here?
So everyone who kind of ran an institution in the area got together and sort of thrashed out what I don't even know the word. What concerns we have,
you know, ideas to form alliances and, you know, things like that.
So. And I think, like, that was really, really helpful. Like, the topics of the immediate discussions were really helpful. And just to reiterate what you were saying earlier, they're not necessarily consistent with what you might think with an art conference. There was not a lot of artists talking. A lot of it was more general of just about getting stuff done. I found there was a presentation given on archiving, three presenters, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, you know, really.
Because it's something we don't do and we should do.
Yeah.
I was getting chills because at pop-up, like, I always feel like my goal is just to get exhibitions out, but I do a terrible job of photographing things, you know.
Well, but it's the same at the National Art Gallery. I mean, we do archive, obviously, but I mean, again, like, it's always about the exhibition making and the exhibition and who's coming to the exhibition and the opening and the paint. And it's like, what about the collection? What about the archiving? What about the historicizing?
Because
what about.
It's necessary.
And these things are really important because in 100 years. That show, like, no one's, you know, people need to know where are those artworks? What did they mean? Are they still in good care? Can you still view them?
I got an email from a local collector last week or so, like, with a work that she'd bought at the studio, like a small drawing, asking me for the name of the person. I felt so bad. Like, I was like, I don't even remember. I can't. I don't even remember what show this is from. So I had to say sorry, like, and now that artwork is anonymous, and I feel, you know, like that part of the conference and that bit specifically kind of lit a fire in me. I was like, all right, let's be a little bit more professional.
Yeah, and I think it does hit to like what a gallery actually does, whether it's a selling gallery, a commercial gallery, or an institution like the National Art Gallery, which is a museum, this back office work is really, really important, and people don't kind of get it. They're like, oh, you're just there putting on shows, and or you're there painting all day, and it's like this recording and archiving, and so that exactly someone can call you in 5 years and say, oh, this work, what is it, who's it from, where does it mean, where does the artist live now, how do I contact them? It's really, really important work, and so you're right, I think that archiving one sort of sent chills down my spine too.
I also didn't realize or I sort of didn't clock with me until I can't remember who gave the talk about how when there is no documentation, when there's a vacuum of documentation, it gets filled with something else.
Was it Eddie Chambers?
I think so. Eddie Chambers. And for that, I mean, sort of obvious thing to say, but it really reminds you that, okay, so if pop-up doesn't have documentation, it's gonna still get filled, but with the wrong information. And he talked about the erasure of that kind of information,
and specifically I think because there was also another presentation from somebody working in Scotland, right? And what was really interesting was to learn
Tiffany
that
Boyle, yes.
Tiffany Boyle, exactly. And I think Tiffany Boyle and Eddie Chambers both were speaking to this erasure, and they were erasure of black stories.
Yeah.
Because at that time in the 50s and 60s and 70s in England, you know, a lot of black people weren't, like, you know, at the high level part of the art scene. And so all these stories and all these tales weren't getting told or memorialized. And I think what I learned, I mean, there's this amazing, and we consider him a Caribbean artist, even though, you know, I think his father's from Guyana originally. Hugh Locke, who's very well known. He's in every single Caribbean art show. His father was an artist, and they're only discovering it now and discovering lost works, and that he worked for many years in Scotland and was right. at the university there. But this is a sort of undocumented story.
Yeah.
So it's really important for us to, like, document our history. Absolutely. So the NAGB is considering hosting this conference, not next year, but the year after. How would you guys feel about that? Do you think that would be
I think it would be a great opportunity. I mean, I'm sure it's a monumental exercise.
Yeah, it is.
And lots of, I think, like, the Cayman Islands were, I didn't go to the first two, but I think they were really well sponsored. I have the program in front of me now, and it's just like
they do. Then, well, the Perez
see, like,
actually
12 things in there, like yeah. So it's not an inexpensive exercise, but it's definitely worthwhile. And I think the peripheral infrastructure of the art community here, with things like the Diego Art Foundation pop up, Dungalik, and lots of artists just working, would really also benefit from those deeper discussions,
yeah.
as well as the institution, the NAGB,
yeah.
who I think would really would benefit them
yeah.
like, from
yeah.
having its own.
I think so too. I mean, I spent the whole time thinking, how would I do this? How would I do this?
Yeah, yeah.
Could we do it better? Could we do it the same? Or would we do it less
yeah.
well? Because, as you said, I think what's interesting for me, it's my third time in Cayman.
Okay.
And so I know the institution quite well, and Natalie quite well. And I feel like we sort of have two very different sets of problems, which is she's
yeah.
got this brand new building, which is built to spec. So she doesn't have any of the issues of, like, oh, this ceiling's too low, and the sound's too bad in here, and the lighting's awful. And because our lighting's okay, but again, you're in a domestic space with these hanging, you know, it would be better to have higher ceilings, and the walls move, and they can do all these things, and they have their dedicated lecture space, which we don't have, right? We're always, basically, we do all our back office work outside.
Yes.
We teach outside. We'd reframe outside, which is not ideal, right? We should not be reframing artworks on the veranda. So they have all that kind of support. They have their education space where all the kids can come, and when we do our summer camp, our veranda is just destroyed, and it, you know, it's not ideal, right? It'd be better if we had a space. But then they have, again, this building, which is beautiful, but I think is not as engaging for a local audience because it's very unfamiliar. And even though our building is fancy and isn't maybe like how most people grew up, there's a familiarity to it when you get inside. It feels Bahamian. It, you know, it feels like a, you know, a giant, like a clapboard house. It was blown up 20 times, right? So it's got the verandas and it's got the wood. So I think, like, our students and our local community have a sense of comfort when they're inside it. I mean, not maybe crossing the threshold, there's always that difficulty, but I think once they're there, and I think our artist community is much more supportive and more grassroots. Like, we have a lot of artists that want to participate, whereas there it seems like they have this amazing building, but they're trying to get their artists to the level that they feel they should be to participate.
And
you know?
Yeah, and even though Cayman isn't very large, I think for us, another benefit is that a lot of the peripheral institutions are actually quite close to the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
UB is right there. Pop-Up's right
yeah.
there.
Central Bank Hillside
House is right there. So I think, you know, a way to do it is maybe including those peripheral institutions in terms of programming.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
not all of the weight is on one. But I don't know how to do it. So
yeah, I know exactly.
That's heavy lifting. That's beyond...
Yeah, I know, right.
I don't want to say pay grade. That sounds like a Trump
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
no, like,
well,
you know, something.
You're
going to
be on my
lines.
Consulting board for the next one, for sure.
I'm very invested. It was a really wonderful couple days.
Well, I think it was really great to have also artists participating. So I was really glad you came because I think again, you know, we are a community and we all have to participate together. And I think sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, that's your job, like. But sometimes it's like, no, I have to help you do yours, and you have to help me do mine. And I felt the whole tilting axis thing is it overall has that sense of community where we're all here to support and assist each other. And if we do, we can do great things. And I feel like that's kind of my takeaway. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, that's actually it for this week. As usual, the hour flies by. So I want to thank Heino Schmidt, Associate Professor at UB in the Art Department and founder of Pop-Up Studios and Practicing Artist. And thank Tessa Whitehead as well, who's also a practicing artist. Both of them have work on show right now at the National Art Gallery in the permanent exhibition, which is the show we curate out of our collection and the D'Aguilar and Dawn Davies collection. It has a lot of work by a lot of different artists. So a lot of the old favorites are in there, the Burnsides and Max Taylor and Eddie Minnis and people like that. But also it goes up to contemporary artists. And it sort of tells the history of the Bahamas and of our art scene. So it's a new show, although we re-curate that show. So please come to the NAGB if you haven't seen An Eye for the Tropics. It's on the ground floor. It's free to get in every Sunday. So the rest of the week, we're open Tuesday to Saturday. There is a fee to get in, but on Sundays, it's always free. And we're open from noon to 5. So please come with your family. And we have two other shows upstairs. We have the Terry Lamar retrospective, and we have the Unseen Structure, a sort of homage to George Cox by his son, John Cox. So we have a lot going on also at our National Gallery. You can listen to this show again on our website, where you can find lots of information about what's happening, our calendar of events. Go to www.nagb.org.bs and explore our website to see all the stuff we have going on. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.